The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We fighting it a little bit today, but I'll be all right. Hit me over the weekend. Kind of like U of A basketball. So, yeah, there's been a lot around the University of Arizona, and there'll be much more to come out, I am sure. You should be sure on this. Greg Hansen will be with us today, Arizona Daily Star columnist. He has already written that Sean Miller should go, and he has written quite a bit around this program. It really comes down to this. If you missed it over the weekend, I was at a charity event on Saturday night, and I ran into two Valley radio sports talk show guys. One of them said, "Yeah, I'm not paying any attention to stuff because I'm not working." So he didn't know anything that was going on with Sean Miller. And the other one was just kind of sort of aware of what was going on. And I was just kind of befuddled by that because this is what is the biggest story that's going on. Our industry sometimes is just mind-blowing. If you don't want to be into it, then just get out. It's not that hard. ESPN's report of wiretapped phone conversations between Miller and former sports agent Christian Dawkins to arrange a $100,000 payment for DeAndre Ayton to play at Arizona. The story by ESPN has been changed a couple of times since, but at no point in time have they said this is not something that didn't happen. The details are getting worked out. There is the free market system of how college players should be paid, from my point of view. There is this side for University President Robbins at the U of A. It's very simple. I'll get into that in a minute. And this is a systemic story. This is not just a U of A story or a college basketball story. So all that is straight ahead. We'll have Derek Hall with us today, Diamondbacks president and CEO. He will check in to talk about the start of spring training, the addition of Steven Souza, and much, much more. That's around the Diamondbacks. And in between that, things that I see that are going on in the world of sports. We're brought to you by our opening comments, opening thoughts, Sagicor. Sagicor Now, guys, sign on to SagicorNow.com and check out your life insurance options, your life insurance possibilities, what it is that you need to take care of. That is with life insurance, and that is with Sagicor. Protect what matters most. If something were to happen to you today, do you have it planned out? Do you have it figured out? Are you going to say, I'll put it off till another day? SagicorNow.com. Go to Sagicor Now and make sure you get it taken care of. Get your free quote at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Greg Hansen here shortly. So, Sean Miller's future really comes down to this. He didn't coach in the game on Saturday night at Oregon. University President Robbins has to decide if this is going to happen. There's three things the president of the university has to pull together. The Board of Regents had an emergency session on Saturday on this story. So, either they fire Sean Miller, they suspend Sean Miller, they defend Sean Miller. I don't think there's any other way that you can go on this. Eric, are you seeing any other option on this deal with Sean Miller? It's either you fire him, you defend him, or you suspend him. There's nothing else.
Yeah,
with Sean Miller.
I completely agree. I didn't see how Sean Miller would ever coach another college basketball game at U of A, much less at any major institution. And then after I took a step back and thought about the process, if U of A does fire him, he will coach again. Just because that's just the way it is in sports.
Sure. No.
We live in a very forgiving society, and especially when it comes to sports, we live in a really, really forgiving environment.
Okay, so if you're an ASU fan watching right now, if you're an ASU fan, you just heard what Eric said, you totally disagree with him. You just want this whole thing with ASU, U of A is a separate story. But look, when stuff happened with ASU, with point shaving, I was right in the middle of that deal, and people reveled in it. And guess what? The program bottomed out, and then it came back as best as it could. You could say ASU basketball has yet to bottom out. I think they've done that, and they've come back, and they've been just fine. If U of A just looks at this top to bottom and said, this is a systemic thing, Sean's going to go, Ayton's not going to be in the postseason, he's going to move on anyways, we're never going to see Alonzo Trier again, we're going to bottom out, we're going to self-impose sanctions, and you're not going to see hide or hair of us. First of all, I can't see that happening because the amount of television revenue lost, Pac-12 tournament. What, you're not going to play in the Pac-12 tournament? You know, there's games there that have money tied to them. So, of course, they're going to play in the Pac-12 tournament. Them saying they're not going to the NCAA, yeah, they could do that. The NIT, they could do that.
And U of A is a power program. Like, we saw it with North Carolina and their issues with their grades and some of their self-suspensions and how they kind of dipped. And last year they won the national championship, and they're back to being an elite program. And I think U of A, if they bottomed out, would be able to get on the upswing relatively quickly.
Well, you have to do it soon, too. I mean, look,
oh, yeah.
If you know Sean is not going to be your coach, then you fire Sean now, so you're first to market, because there will be people out there that will say, I can be the next coach at U of A. I can be that guy.
Have we seen an athletic, smudged timeline, anything close to what we've seen from U of A in the last 2 or 3 months?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, and of course, it's a media witch hunt.
Right.
Of course it is. Yeah. Yeah. We're the ones that you have a football player that punched out a girl. Well, that happens at all places. Well, you have a coach that had an extramarital affair and then was fired. Well, that happens at all sorts.
And harassment charges.
And harassment charges. And you have a basketball coach. Well, that happens everywhere. Well, no, it doesn't happen everywhere.
And Alonzo Trier with a trace of
again. Again, well, that's just media after Alonzo Trier. You know, there's people even in our industry that are apologists about programs rather than being journalists about their programs. There are national names that cover college basketball that have yet to weigh in on this story because they're too tight with Sean Miller. I mean, look, that's why when you decide to climb in bed with somebody when you're in this industry, and then you don't sit there when the bad news comes and try to decipher through it. It's very disappointing.
You know, Brad, real quick, sorry to interrupt you.
No,
it's fine. The one person that I'd really love to talk to, and I think you and I had this conversation a couple months ago, man, I'd love to crawl inside Greg Burns' brain right now.
Well, there's people who are taking shots at Greg, and I think it's very fair to wonder.
I agree. I tend to agree. Did he get out before did he smell the smoke and got out of the house before it started burning?
Well, you could make that argument, but
is he even a bigger part of the problem?
Well, getting out for Greg Byrne, getting out is going to Western Kentucky. Getting out is going to Pacific. Getting out is going to Idaho State.
Right.
Alabama came open.
Yeah.
So did
with
he really,
whole, with a whole truckload of money waiting.
So for people that said, well, he just got out, he ran away. He didn't run away. It's Alabama. Alabama was open and Greg took it. I would think that if we were to sit with Greg and have a nice conversation about all of this, yeah, potentially you could find some things that he would say, yeah, I may have had knowledge. I may not have.
And Greg didn't hire Sean, but Greg did hire Rich.
Sure. Sure. So beyond that, you're right about Greg, okay? But the fact that Shaq's kid decommitted and Brandon Williams is probably going to decommit, and you look at the players that are down there right now, Alex Barcelo's barely playing at all. Is he going to say, what was I doing coming down here? All this stuff, but the system is the other part of this, and the free market is part of this too. I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to break here about a minute early. I'm going to break early because I want some extra time with Greg Hansen, Arizona Daily Star columnist, the latest from Tucson with Greg Hansen. That is on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. Our television show, Brad Sussmat Football AZ, airs 16 times per week on Fox Sports Arizona. Make sure you watch the Brad Sussmat Football AZ show as well over on Fox Sports AZ. We appreciate their partnership. Greg Hansen joins us now, Arizona Daily Star, longtime columnist. The latest from Tucson, Sean Miller's future, and a wild weekend around the U of A. I'm going to back up for a minute, Greg, and I appreciate you joining us. If I would have told you in early December that Rich Rod would be out, you probably would have said, 50-50, 60-40.
Sure.
If I would have told you Rich Rod and Sean would both be gone by March, you probably would have said, what, 60-40, 50-50? And add to that, are both of them going to be out here shortly, in your opinion?
Well, if they bring Sean Miller back this week, it would be a stunner of all time. Given the series of negative events in the athletic department here in the last 2 years, I don't know how they could trot him back out now.
What is the vibe in Tucson around Sean Miller? What are you hearing from fans, the passionate fan base that is U of A?
Oh, a total freak out. I mean, you know as well as anybody, this is the thing that spins Tucson 12 months of the year, and suddenly they are in a dark winter that is going to take, what do you think, 2 or 3 years to get out of.
So do they want him gone too, Greg? Are they at that point where the fan base has turned on Sean Miller?
I think the average fan wants him to stay and to rescue everything, but that's not possible now because they're not going to be able to recruit anybody for, you know, any good players for quite a while. And so he's not going to stay here. Even if he could, he wouldn't stay here to go through this process now. Mm. I mean, the damage is done.
Let's back up to this then. So Friday night is when this story breaks. You're already up in Oregon. It was a hard-fought game against Oregon State on Thursday night, a game they had to come from behind, go into overtime. There's no Alonzo Trier, so there's already the Trier stuff hanging over it. Take me back through the process of Friday when you first received the news, how the U of A basketball side handled it with you, and then how you processed it. Just give us a little bit of process here, Greg.
The processing to me was, it took a while. And when I heard Jay Billis, who I really respect strongly, early Saturday morning on game day say that Sean Miller's career is over, and then he used the word crook in describing what Sean had done, I mean, what can be worse than that? And from then, the U of A hasn't had any interaction with anybody. They're going to have to pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
All they did was sent Lorenzo Romar out after the game for about a 3.5-minute Q&A session where obviously he wasn't going to talk about this situation. And that's where it stands because the U of A hasn't even – something as simple as the weekly press conference that Sean Miller always has on Monday or Tuesday, you know, obviously that's been shocked to smithereens. And, you know, they have a game Thursday night. Something's going to have to be said before then.
Okay. And to that end, I thought that you were very strong in your approach. And reading you through the years, you're not somebody that just shows up and fires a shotgun randomly and hope it hits something. You are a fly swatter when it's appropriate, sledgehammer when it's appropriate type of columnist, in my opinion. And Saturday, you brought the sledgehammer out and brought it down very hard. I'll just paraphrase it, and you can fill it in. That you don't believe Sean Miller should remain the coach.
You know, Book Richardson and Joe Pasternak, his two top recruiters last year, are both mentioned frequently in these leaked FBI investigation tapes. And now Miller is leaked. Three guys. So you think there's much question that there's some involvement? I don't. And just beyond that, you know, Arizona cannot recruit now. So they've got to start over. And Sean Miller's not going to be the guy to start over with. So they have to get a new coach. That was my opinion.
Okay. And to that end, what have you heard back from the U of A on this, if anything?
Nothing. They're in the ultra silent mode, kind of like they were in the Rich Rod stuff. Kind of like they've been when their track coach went amok, and kind of like they've been when they've had a sexual predator in the football program. They've said nothing, and you know, I saw Mike Krzyzewski come out Saturday and defend his player who was linked to this FBI investigation. He defended his kids.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State came out. John Calipari came out, defended his kids who were mentioned. I'm thinking that's why Shaquille O'Neal's son, Sharif O'Neal, withdrew from Arizona on Saturday because Arizona didn't come out and defend DeAndre Ayton.
Mm-hmm.
His attorney defended him, but the U of A didn't. imagine the parents of recruits and recruits themselves who are watching this play out going, wow, UVA didn't defend DeAndre Ayton.
So is that a reflection then on Dave Hickey or the people under him hired to do all of this? Where are you pointing the finger at, Greg?
Yeah, I'm not really pointing the finger at him, but I'm sure they're following their attorney's instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine what it's like in there slugging it out with Sean Miller's attorneys today and yesterday? Everybody's trying to save face, and the U of A is trying to save money as well. And to me, the bottom line of it all is they're not going to get any accurate information from the FBI. So it's really tough on the U of A president to decide to what extent Sean Miller's telling the truth.
And the Board of Regents had an emergency session, correct, on Saturday about this?
Yeah, and they also can't get accurate information from the FBI because they're not going to give them what they've got. So really, how do they act? It's so delicate. Sean Miller earned a lot of trust during the years,
mm-hmm.
and now suddenly overnight they say, we don't trust you at all, anything you're saying?
Because it seems to me, and I believe you're the one that wrote this, or maybe it was Bruce Pascoe, who's done terrific work on this as well, is
mm-hmm.
President Robbins doesn't really have many options here. He can either go fight for him or he can fire him. I mean, there's really not that much ground
yeah.
here. There's not a middle ground. It's either one or the other. And he's got to do something sooner than later on this.
Yeah, isn't the timing amazing on this? Picture this. Arizona beat Stanford and Cal, and they probably should.
Mm-hmm.
After the game on Saturday afternoon, they'll climb the ladder and cut down the nets, you know, and celebrate a Pac-12 championship, the last one for many years. And who's going to be the guy who cuts down the net? Will it be Lorenzo Romar?
Hmm. So you
will the fans celebrate as always, knowing that this whole thing's going to come to an end in a week or two? I don't know.
And so for those fans, and there's been some speculation, I think people just with microphones and in this day and age of Twitter that anything can be thrown out there. But I do think it's interesting that there are some that believe U of A should not play in the postseason, that they should just say, we're not going to be in the Pac-12 tournament. There's television contracts there, so I can't see that happening.
Yeah, yeah.
The NCAA tournament, that's a different story. You know, you would think that you would go play through the NCAA tournament. A kid like DeAndre
sure.
Ayton, the way the system is set up, a kid like DeAndre Ayton, if anything impermissible did happen, what's the punishment for him? Nothing. He's going to get drafted by the Suns or
yeah.
somebody in the top two picks in June. And therein lies the issue. You're covering, Greg, a power program that's had lots and lots of these one-and-done guys. There's lots and lots of these guys that want to go to the NBA. So to think that this is just the first time that this has happened, given what's out there with assistant coaches, I guess what I'm wondering from you is, have you sensed this, has suspected this for the last few years with all these guys that Sean has tried to build the program around?
That's a really good question. To me, the character of the guys they brought in led me to think that they weren't guys with their hands out. Aaron Gordon, he's as good a guy as you're going to come across as a college freshman. And his family is highly educated people. Stanley Johnson, same way, came across as a guy that you would want to know. And Rondae Hollis Jefferson, holy cow, most popular guy in this town for a couple of years. And now DeAndre Ayton, and you know him. He's you like him immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they're recruiting these guys like UNLV used to have. Remember when they were those brooding, in-your-face guys during the Tark years? Miller didn't bring in guys like that. So, to me, it was easy not to even think about somebody having their hands out.
A couple other questions for you, Greg, and I appreciate your time. We're with Greg Hansen, Arizona Daily Star, longtime columnist, everything from Tucson with Sean Miller's future. The former players, Steve Kerr was very eloquent the other night, I thought.
Yeah.
As he's been throughout all of this. The other side of it is Jason Terry immediately said, let's drop the bomb and let's move on. Talk to me about the former players and their reactions towards Sean Miller in this story.
Did you see Andre Iguodala's
missed
tweet?
It. Oh, yeah, the cuffs. Book got the cuffs. Yeah. No, I did see that one. Yeah.
Well, you know, if you have Steve Kerr, Steve Kerr's going to be heavily involved in who the direction Arizona goes once they decide if they're going to relieve Sean. They'll consult with him right away. I mean, you could clean up the whole mess by bringing in Luke Walton for next year. But that's, it's at 99-1. That's not going to happen. Plus, who would come in and agree to start over here? I mean, next year Arizona's probably going to go 2-16 in the Pac-12. Who are they going to get to agree to do that? I know Tom Crean walked into a similar situation at Indiana when Kelvin Sampson was fired, and it took him, I think, 3.5 or 4 years to get Indiana back. So that's probably what Arizona's looking at. And I don't think there's anyone with Arizona blood who could come in and coach, so they're going to have to go outside. And, it's going to be pretty interesting seeing this.
Yeah, Mike Bibby talked about this a little bit after Shadow Mountain won their state title game up here, and people were asking him about his interest in things, and he didn't go too far down the pipe other than it sounds like he's ready to go do something else. I wrote last week on Tuesday and just talked about it here on the show that a Sean Miller, DeAndre Ayton to the Phoenix Suns made a lot of sense to me last Tuesday because I've just sensed that Sean's time down there, and I've heard from some NBA people that Sean would make a good NBA coach. That obviously was before all this, but here's the thing. Something like this happens to Sean Miller, he's not going to be able to coach on the college end again, in my view. Yeah. But he could go right to the NBA. Would you agree with that or think he's just done coaching in general?
The NBA thing is foreign to me because I'm not involved in it. I don't know what they would think about this. But you know Sean, too. He's a hard guy to deal with. Does that fly in the NFL? I mean, in the NBA?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's so private. You can't be private in the NBA. I mean, he just almost bites his tongue during his few little harmless college press conferences down here. What would you do when he has to talk to the media 3 times a day in Phoenix?
Yeah. Last question. How does this end up from your view between now and Thursday night? What do you believe is going to happen?
I would like to ask you that question.
You're the one down there, but my view on this is the president at some point has got to speak this week. You can't just send press releases out. At some point, and Sean is not going to be the one that speaks. If he does, he's going to say there's a lot that I can't discuss. So is it Lorenzo Romar talking about games? So what? From your view down there, how do you think this plays out this week, the next few days?
They luck into a situation where they can trot out Lorenzo Romar, who is a first-class individual and a successful college basketball coach who can say the right things, and they can put Sean behind them. If Sean Miller comes out to speak, I will fall over and faint. It's all in risk management and damage control right now, and they've got to move on. And the president has to step up, not the athletic director, the president.
Yes.
And I mean, it would be interesting to see if the ASU president was here, because I think he would rule with an iron fist in this situation. And I don't think nobody knows yet what the Arizona president is like because he's so new.
That's a good point. It's a good point. Hey, I appreciate your time and insight, Greg. As always, I'll see you down the road. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Always good to catch up with Greg Hansen, Arizona Daily Star columnist. That's a good point there about the president. It's really interesting. More on this on the other side. Derek Hall in about 10 minutes, the president and CEO of the Diamondbacks. It's the 20th anniversary of the Diamondbacks. So there's a lot of things that they're doing around the franchise. I want to talk to him about also Steven Souza and much more as we continue on a Monday, sports360az.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. There are some other things I want to get to, but in this segment, it's a shorter segment, just to go back on the U of A and the system. I mentioned off the top that the system, it starts, this whole thing with Arizona, it's all across college basketball. If you're one of those fans that said, well, this isn't going to happen in my school, good luck with that. Something's going to pop up somewhere over the course of all these documents being released. This is off of just one agent, remember. This is one agent. So this starts systemically in about junior high school with AAU basketball. Kids become high-profiled, websites do features on them, they build up kids. There are people that start to gravitate towards these kids that don't have good intentions except to make money for themselves off of these kids. Then those kids go to high school. They're supposed to go to the high school that's right across the street from them, but instead they find ways to go to high schools that become basketball factories for the most part. They want to play for that coach. They want to play for that club guy who's tied to that coach. That happens in high school. And then when high school starts to come to an end, you're a player of very high end. You're already being told you're going to go into the NBA. And the mother and the father and the aunt and the uncle and the brothers and the cousins and the nephews that all don't care one bit about the college that you're going to go to. They don't care. All they care about is you getting to the league. And so when they start to run into the runners at the high school games or the club tournaments, what I mean by runners is it's pretty easy to spot them. They're the dudes that are there with three or four cell phones that talk really fast, that bump into you and tell you how great your kid is, and that they sit there and they watch, and they don't have a kid who's out there playing. And they're runners. That's all they are. And so that guy is there for an agent. He's there to make the contact. Oh, I'm so sorry to bump into you, Mrs. So-and-so. Oh, that's your son. Oh, he's really good. Hey, let me tell you how great he is or she is. But in most cases, it's what I've seen, it's on the boy's side. So then that kid's got to make a decision about going to play basketball to continue his career. So now he decides he's going to go to said college. Let me tell you something. The aunt, the uncle, the brother, the nephews, the cousins, the mom, they don't have an interest in the college for 1 year. They're just trying to get through this deal. It's this gap that has been sitting out there. And rather than have it be a free marketplace in college where if my son's going to go to your college and he's going to make X amount of dollars off each jersey sold with his name on the back of it, and he's going to go to your college for several years, they just go there for a year, they get some money up front, they go to the NBA. It's really not that hard. Or they go to Europe. Or they're being told they're going to make it big, and they get a loan taken out, and now they got to pay back an agent a loan. What's the downside for the agent on this? Nothing. Loan doesn't get paid back. Loan goes into default. They go after the kid. It's really not that hard. It's free market. That's what needs to happen on the college front. Derek Hall is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Television show on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, airs 16 times this week. So the Diamondbacks are doing this really cool thing where it is their 20th anniversary of the franchise. And they're doing all sorts of dates and fun stuff around the team. Derek Hall is going to be with us in a second, the Diamondbacks president and CEO, to talk about what they have coming up this year and also the addition of Steven Sousa and much, much more. So I'm going to take you back to a story. This is April 5th of 1998. And I'm doing the pre and I'm doing the post game for the Diamondbacks. And I've done a lot around the team. I get a phone call. I'm supposed to throw out the first pitch. It's one of those deals where they said, Brad, we want you to throw out a first pitch. That'd be great. I'm driving down, get a phone call. You're going to throw out the first pitch, making sure you know where to go. And I said, that's fine. I'll be there. And I've got my wife and I've got my son in the car. My son is sitting in the back seat. He's wearing his Diamondbacks shirt. He's got his little Diamondbacks jacket on. He's got his little Diamondback hat on. And so we're driving down to the ballpark. This is on a Sunday. The Diamondbacks are supposed to play the Giants. The Diamondbacks at this point hadn't won a game. They're 0-5. So I am supposed to throw out the first pitch. And as they're calling to check in with me, I look in my rearview mirror as I'm along I-10, and I see my son's wearing his little Diamondback hat and his little Diamondback jacket, and he's got his glove, and I'm thinking to myself, there's no way I'm going to throw out this first pitch. So I walk down the tunnel. They take us out on the field. It's my wife. It's my son. It's myself. It's the three of us. And the public address announcer at the time is Jeff Munn. Jeff, of course, did some Diamondback games for years and years. Jeff has great tones. I had told the lady as I'm walking out to throw the first pitch, even before then, that I'm not going to do it. My son Kyle is going to throw out the first pitch. So we walk out, and throughout the first pitch, it was Brad Sesmad with KTAR, do the wave, do that stuff. And his son Kyle was going to throw out the first pitch. So Kyle looks up at me. Kyle's about 7 at the time. I hand him the ball. I said, that's right, go do it. We walk out there. He throws out the first pitch. We have the video of it. We've got great pictures of it. The Diamondbacks go to win the game with Andy Benes. And that was the first win in the history of the regular season of the Diamondbacks. So the trivia question is, who threw out the first pitch in the first win in the history of the team? It's Kyle Sesmad. That is my story. And with that, Diamondback president and CEO Derek Hall checks in with us. Now it is the 20-year anniversary of this team, and you have all sorts of cool things that are going on. It's good to hear your voice, first and foremost. Actually, your heavy breathing.
Thank you, Brad.
How are you?
That was more of a laugh, but yeah, doing well. In fact, I'm here to announce after that story that we're going to have Kyle Sesmad throw out the first pitch 81 times.
And he would say, there's not a chance I'm ever going to do that ever again. Never again.
Doing well. It's hard to believe 20 years, isn't it? I mean, it's crazy. You blink and it's already 20 years. We're still the youngest franchise in baseball, but now, you know, we've got quite a tenure.
That was a cotton grove, and Joe Garagiola Sr., Joe Jr., Jerry, and myself painted a diamond down in the cotton field. And I did the show live down there, and we kind of thought where the bases were going to be. And then Grant Trenbeth buried a time capsule with Pat McMahon and myself in center field about 30 feet down that's supposed to be opened by the Historical Society. I don't know if it's still out there or not. I don't know. But, yeah, for me to see everything that's gone on around the team in 20 years, it is like a blink through the good, the bad, the ugly. And there's been a little bit of everything, as there always is in professional sports.
Yeah, you're always going to have that. But you look at the success of this franchise, and for us, when you look at the frequency of making the playoffs, and we've been in the postseason 6 times in just, 19 years, we are only second to the Yankees in making the postseason in years of existence. So we got to keep that going, and that responsibility lies on us.
You also have a bunch of former Diamondbacks that are managing, too, if we were to bounce around. The number of former Diamondbacks that are current Major League Baseball managers is really a stunning number.
It is, and it's a point of pride. I mean, it truly is. But, when you look at last season and your World Series champion manager was, he had his first chance at managing here, so you're proud of that. And a lot of times it'll take a manager his second go-around to really get it and to click, and I was very proud of the work he did.
All right, so what do you have coming up here? I'm going to get into on the field, but for the fans that are looking ahead to this season, what are you looking at putting together for the 20-year anniversary? What are some of the highlights this year that you're going to do?
Well, it's going to be season-long, but, we'll have first thing we did was create a logo and a patch that we're going to wear on our jerseys throughout the entire season. We'll wear them on our hats for the first homestand, but they will be displayed on the jerseys throughout the whole year. That first homestand, because we're opening at home, is obviously an important one, and we open up on the 29th of March, a little earlier than normal, and oddly enough, we're going up against the Rockies, so we're going to have a national anthem sung by a Hall of Famer who actually was there for the opener on that first game, and we're going to have one member of each of those 6 postseason teams out there to throw out the first pitch. The real fun, though, Brad, is on the 31st, that Saturday, because it's the actual date 20 years ago when we opened up, and it's against the same team being the Rockies. Mm. So we're going to recreate that pitch that you remember very well. You just mentioned Andy Benes. It's Andy Benes to Jorge Fabregas. Mike Lansing was the leadoff batter for the Rockies, so we're going to have those 3 back out there and recreate that. But just a year-long celebration. We've already started an all-D-backs team that the fans are voting on. Anybody can vote on that team, every position. And, that's at dbacks.com/20, the number 20. And we're going to break those winners out, hopefully bring as many of them out as we can for that weekend of August 4th, which is always our big alumni weekend where we have the alumni game. We're going to have T-shirts commemorating that, throughout the year. Fans can go back behind the Coors Light strike zone back there behind right field. We're setting up a 20th anniversary experience where we're going to have baseball signed by every player that's been on or worn a D-back uniform, along with all the awards, the Silver Sluggers, the Gold Glove, the Cy Youngs, and just a historical view. So it's going to be fun.
And Mike Lansing works for you, doesn't he? When you're going to simulate this first pitch.
Yeah. He's now in our minor league system. It's great. And I think if you recall, the first pitch was ball 1. So we hope that we can reverse that and throw a strike that night. But yeah. It's going to be those 3 guys, which is really cool.
So you can vote on Kareem Garcia and Devon White and Andy Fox and all these guys as in terms of great. Andy Fox was, we had an Andy Fox fan club because there was nothing to talk about by year two when the team was getting their heads kicked in early. And that then they started to win, you know, halfway through that second year. But it was fun to do all of that stuff. So you're reaching out to all these players from the past, it sounds like, and getting them involved.
Absolutely we are. And we've been doing a nice job of that the last few years, bringing them in and having a real good alumni organization and bring them in, like I mentioned, on that alumni weekend. But it's nice to see the guys come back out. You know, they're family. And once a D-back, always a D-back.
All right. So on the field, you go get Souza. I guess I'm looking at this and saying, is the team better than it was? And that's what I'm getting asked by fans. Brad, is the team better than it was at the end of last season? And my response is, we have to wait and see. You can't just automatically say, oh, yeah, no question about it. You're diminishing J.D. Martinez on one hand. And on the other hand, you don't know if Souza, what he can do here. You think they're better, right? But what do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I don't know if we're better than we were at the end of last season. I mean, that was a magical season. JD came at the right time. He, you know, he brought tremendous power and consistency for us. I think he obviously helped push us over the top. Yet we were a really good team before his arrival, and you know we were contending. We were going to be the first or second wild card team, it looked like, and probably would have gotten there with or without him. But he made it so much easier and so much more exciting. I think. More so we could compare, Brad, how we started last season and how we're going to start this season. I think our team is better this year to open the season, and then we're going to have the flexibility to go out and do like we did with JD, you know, at the trade deadline. If we want to improve this team and we're in a position to do that, we're going to strike and make that move. So, you know, we're in a good position. I think we're better off than we were starting last year, but we have to get lucky. We have to stay healthy. We have to have the pitching and defense we did last year, and you can never count on that. You know, you hope that you're going to be equally as strong as you were last year, but look, we had very similar team the year before in 16, and our record was reversed. You know, we were 69, and then you turn it around and win 83 games the next year. You just can never tell. You need a lot to go your way.
Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. We appreciate them day in, day out. Carrying our show, our partnership with Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sesmat, Football AZ, airs 16 times this week. We're with Derek Hall. Appreciate the president and CEO of the Diamondbacks with us. I'm not going to do heavy lifting stuff with you today about future and contracts and all that stuff. I'm curious, you and I and Ken Kendrick and myself, through the years, it's usually Ken telling me that you two have a guy, right?
So, yes, we do.
And this is always a spring training deal. Derek has his guy, and sometimes I'll see you and you're like, that's my guy. And Ken will say, no, that's my guy. So I am curious. This is a fun sort of thing, so fans have an idea. Who is your guy this spring training, and who is Ken's guy, or do I have to ask him on the show?
That's a great question, and it's just too soon.
I mean, get out of here. Come on.
We've only had a couple of games. We wait till closer to the end of spring. We're going to pick a minor league guy, and then we pick our guy for, you know, everyday position player and pitcher. But it's a lot of fun. It's competitive, and I try and lead him one way or the other during these games, and he says, get out of here. That's not my guy. And I go, no, that's your guy. And he'll try and pick my guy, but we have a little draft here right before opening day. So it's we're still collecting all our facts.
All right. I'll look. I'll let you. Right. Thanks a lot for that answer. So if you were to give me a couple of guys here in spring that are not the obvious names, I mean, how is Robbie Ray looking here in spring, and Pat Corbin and Zach? That stuff's obvious. Give me a couple names of guys here in spring that fans may want to look closer at and say, you know, this is an interesting name within our organization for fans to keep an eye on. Who are a couple of names?
Yeah, there's a couple. I think first and foremost, a guy that is a veteran, but they wouldn't know much about, Alex Avila, who, you know, is a catcher. He was an all-star, obviously, at one point. Mm-hmm. Detroit most of his career, but he's another guy that's a lot like Iannetta was for us, who's a leader, who's a veteran, who enjoys catching. He takes pride in calling games, and that's an important part for how we improved last year. You know, we're bringing back Mathis, obviously. We have J.R. Murphy. We have an emphasis on defensive-minded catching. That's one. I would say the addition of Dyson, Jerrod Dyson, you know, here's a guy with speed. We haven't been much of a speed team of late, so to have a guy that you can bring in the game at any point to play great defense in any of the three outfield positions, that's a key. I look at some of the additions that we've made with the bullpen. Again, not household names, but guys who have had a lot of experience at the back end of a bullpen, like Brad Boxberger from Tampa. I mean, watch this guy. He's a pro. He knows how to close a game. He can pitch 7th, 8th, or 9th. Yoshi Hirano, who was one of the greatest all-time closers in Japanese history, now coming over here for the first time. And then I would say Ketel Marte. You know, he showed at the end of the year, Brad, that this guy can play. I mean, he can hit anywhere in the order. He can play second. He can play short. And now we have, with the absence of Drury because of the moves we made, you can play him at second. You can play Nick at short. You can play Owings at second. You can play, you know, Marte at short. You can play Descalzo at second. There's so much movement and fluidity there. I think there's a lot to watch. But that competition at shortstop and second base is going to be fun all spring.
What do you like most about Souza other than 30 home runs?
Well, I think he's an all-around player. I mean, first, what we've heard about makeup-wise, he knows a lot of the guys on our team, and they just swear by him. He was intense. He was their MVP last year. The guy has a great arm. He's a really good defender, can run, and of course, he's got the power. I think where he's going to continue to improve is hitting for average, but, you know, he's always been a power guy. To watch his numbers go from, you know, the teens and home runs to 30 last year, it's you're showing just it's continuing to go up, the trajectory, but I think he's an all-around player and fans are going to enjoy watching him every day. He can play probably anywhere in the outfield, but right field is going to be his position for the most part, and he's going to be a very consistent player but intense. This guy is known for walk-offs. He's known for clutch hits, and I just like the all-around five-tool type player that he is.
Last question. What do you like most? What concerns you most about this team as we're sitting here on the 26th of February?
You know, Brad, I really like our rotation. I think last year, you know, we saw more of what we thought we'd see out of Greinke. The emergence of Robbie Ray, who's a future ace for sure. Taijuan Walker was solid as could be. Corbin being a strong lefty in this division. And then, you know, Zach Godley. I mean, this kid was as consistent as anybody. So I really like our pitching. I like our rotation. You know, what concerns me is I think what would concern anybody, just to make sure that that we can stay healthy and consistent. And what concerns me is looking at the same team for the most part from 2016 to 2017, how you could have such a wild swing. I want to make sure we get out of the chutes right away and very strongly, because our schedule is tough. I mean, that's what keeps me up at night, looking at it, the way we start the season with very tough competition, especially when we hit the road right away. So I want to make sure we get out of the gate strong.
I'll see you down the road. Appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
You got it, my friend. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Brad.
You got it.
Okay.
There's Derek Hall, president and CEO of the Diamondbacks, with us. That's our show for today. Thanks for being with us. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen, as always, puts this together. For more content, head over to our website, sports360az.com. We are self-funded, which means the sponsors that you see, these commercials, they believe in what we're doing. We appreciate them and their support. Have yourself a great Monday.